Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Please turn off all cell phones. Today's March 22nd, 2021. The time is 9:03. Here today with us, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilikowski, and good morning, Senator Wilson. And we have a full complement today. I'd like to thank our Senate Finance Committee secretaries and moderators. Good morning. And on today's agenda is SB 19, Extend Special Education Service Agency. We're going to roll that one to the bottom of the calendar for today. We're going to Senate Bill 32, the college credit for high school students. And then SB 36, University of Regents reporting requirements. And I don't know, Senator Stevens, he's got three in a row here, so he must be living right today. Due to scheduling constraints, we might have to abbreviate the schedule a little bit to work with everyone's time today. So any other business to come before committee before we get started? Seeing none, an act establishing the Alaska Middle College Program, Senate Bill 32. For public school students and the relating powers of the University of Alaska. This is the first hearing in Senate Finance. My intention is to hear and hold this bill today. And here today are Senator Stevens and his trusty chief of staff, or staff, Tim Lampkin. Please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and proceed with your introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak, pleasure to be with you. You have three great bills before you today, and I'm really appreciative of your hearing them all at once, or at least in succession. So on the bill before you, Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 32, Middle Colleges, you have heard this before, and last year, pretty much with the same committee, you passed it on to rules. So you certainly know the issues that we're talking about today. I appreciate you hearing all of these bills. Basically, it's to break it down to its most simple format, this bill arranges for students all over Alaska to be able to take classes, college-level classes, while they're in high school. Accredited classes, taught by university faculty or accredited school district faculty. The good thing about the bill, I think, is first that it does bring the university into it. I think many students who begin this process of taking University of Alaska college credit classes while they are in high school, many of them go on to become full-time students at University of Alaska. It allows them to understand what it means to take a college class and what college classes are like. So there's a tremendous advantage to the university in this process. There's also a great advantage to the school districts because they then are able to help their students be better prepared when they go away to college. But then finally, the ones who really benefit the most are the students. I wish this had been in effect when my three children were going to high school. They could have taken college classes when they were in high school, or when I was in high school. As a matter of fact, it would have been great to really give you a leg up when you go away to college. Certainly not everyone is going to go to college. Not everyone should go to college, but many of our students do and should and want to get this college credit. So, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a great bill. I really appreciate all the effort that you put in the past on this bill. And I'll turn it over to my aide, Tim Lampkin, who can go into some detail on it.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, for that introduction. Mr. Lampkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I want to reiterate before you is a bill that's identical to a bill that passed this very committee last session, but unfortunately, due to COVID, like many other bills on the table at that time, it was left drying on the vine as we adjourned quickly and went home. As a reminder, a refresher, this bill is not intended to micromanage. It's it's a bill that would have the university and school districts to have an agreement consistent with individual district needs, interests, and capability levels. It's designed to provide a framework that is flexible and responsive to those different needs and avoid a one-size-fits-all. Last year, there were very careful negotiations took place between university and superintendents to craft the bill as it is in its current form to improve it and make it a better fit for the stakeholders and the managers involved. That's a summary of what the bill does. I'm happy to go into a sectional perhaps a little bit later in the process if it pleases you. Because of the tightness of the schedule, I'd like to quickly refer to university representatives and superintendents to really get into the meat of the bill.
Yeah, that being fine, I think we'll now go to Dr. Paul Layer, Vice President for Academics and Student Research. Good morning, sir. Put yourself on the record and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Paul Layer, Vice President for Academics, Students, and Research at the University of Alaska. Thank you very much for an opportunity to speak to this bill, and I thank Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin for setting up this bill and for preparing it and presenting it to you today. As was mentioned, dual enrollment programs where the students receive college credit for college-level courses while in high school has been shown to increase college-going rate and also prepare students, give them a economical start on their college education. UA has been a partner for various dual enrollment programs, including the middle college program that we have at UAA with the Anchor School District, the Matsu School District, and also with the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We have almost 500 students in our programs at UAA, and Fairbanks has adopted a middle college program that is expanding as well. In addition to those very classic, what we think of as middle college, where the students are in resident on our campus, taking face-to-face courses, even in this time of COVID, there are face-to-face courses being taught with our students. And there are also other options available for the state. We have an online, essentially what we call a virtual middle college called the Alaska Advantage Program through the University of Alaska Fairbanks that is a partner with the districts. The districts provide support for those students. They provide some advising and counseling and guidance while the university provides college level courses for those students via distance delivery. So even if a district is not in an area with a road system or with a university campus, students can still take college level classes. And this bill and our approach to this has been a partnership with the districts. We talk to every district. We see what their needs are, what the students' needs are, and the students needs are forefront in this discussion in terms of what they would like to see for their college education and college courses. So we work with the districts, large and small, to come up, and with homeschoolers, to come up with ways of providing that service. And so we appreciate the flexibility of this bill to work with districts to come up with agreements that work for those districts. Whether you're large like Anchor School District and working with with Superintendent Bishop and or working with a very small district. So we do support this kind of program and look forward to expanding it in the future. I will mention a couple of other things. You think about these courses and these classes as being sort of college prep. But we, through our community and technical college, especially at UAA, we have also classes that articulate to some of our more workforce-type programs. And so students can take a class that prepares them for a profession through our community and technical college. So they're not just pre-college, what you think of as pre-college or college-level classes. They're a traditional major, but they also are for workforce preparation. I will also mention that these are, quote, real college courses. These are not, students get a transcript, they get a college transcript. There is no asterisk on their transcript. There is nothing that denotes that this is different. This is college level class with college level expectations. And the students and the parents need to be aware of that as they enter into this. So it may not be for everybody, but for students who are interested in going to college, this is a cost affordable mechanism for them to get those credits. And some students have gotten the equivalent of a 60-credit associate's degree before even coming to the University of Alaska. So for us, it is a way to get those students to come to the University of Alaska, to get a jump start on their college education, and to prepare them for workforce. So we very much appreciate Senator Stevens for advancing the bill. And with that, I will be available to answer questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Question. Senator Wilson has a question for you.
Thank you. Good morning. Mr. Lehrer, what's the capacity of the colleges? If this were to pass and you had 13 school districts that wanted to enroll their kids, do you have an infinite number of capacity for those school districts, or what's that limit for each campus?
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator Wilson. We have not reached our capacity on this. Again, through the various options, through our online courses, we have the ability to expand. I will say that for the program with the Fairbanks North Star School District at UAF, we limited the first cohort to 40 to see what the interest would be, and we have a very large waiting list. And so we are now assessing how we might expand that for the next year and get more students engaged in that program. So we are looking at our facilities, and we are looking at our teaching capacity, and right now we are not at that limit as far as we can see. But we do want to make sure that as we expand, that we do provide those support for those students. And that, again, is a partnership with the district to be able to provide those that support. As I said earlier, we have about 30 districts that are now partners with us, either in the face-to-face or in the virtual programs. And so we're looking for more partners, and we're looking to expand to any student that wants to work with their school to be a part of the program.
I have a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what would be the screening criteria if that cap were met in terms of screening in or out students? And then I guess a follow-up to that would be on your distance education program. My understanding is that not all classes have fared well with the traditional students going to online with some of those campuses that one class, for example, in my district has a 40% failure rate compared to in-person learning. So just trying to understand the difference in how the students have done this thus far this year with the distance learning compared to previous years.
Through the chair, thank you very much for that question. With the online program, it's a partnership with the schools. It is, you know, the schools will provide that support for those students, the mentoring, the guidance for those students to keep them engaged. So in a traditional online class where we have students involved, college level students, they may not have that same level of support. So it's critical when we develop these dual enrollment programs with the schools that there is that support mechanism in place. And that is really a major part of what we do in these partner agreements. The MOAs spell out the responsibility of the school and the responsibility of the university in those, and different districts have different needs, and so those wording could be a little bit different. But it is our responsibility with these students to really provide that support going forward. Thank you.
Yes. Seeing no further questions, thank you, sir.
Next, you're welcome.
We'll go to Superintendent Bishop. I like that sound of that, Superintendent Bishop's Anchorage School District.
Thank you, Chair Bishop, as well as Co-Chair Stedman and the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Dina Bishop, and I'm the superintendent of the Anchorage School District, and just here to provide some additional information. I began this work with Middle College back in 2012 with the primary goal, really, to understand college-ready students. As a superintendent, I took it personally when I would hear our kids aren't ready for college. And so pretty much began to look around the country at programs so that not only we could offer this to our students, but be a scout and a spy to prepare every other student back in our school district who did not participate in understanding what is that niche in college that in that transition from high school to college. And really the outcome of that was establishing the Alaska Middle College School. It's a particular program that does provide place-based education for college credit. However, it's not the only kind of dual credit program. The bill before you actually allows for quite a many different models depending on the school districts themselves and the needs that they see for their students. But school districts could have advanced placement, dual credit where it's taught by a university person, dual credit where the university actually hires a high school teacher with the credentials to be able to teach the curriculum and the textbooks. This doesn't eliminate, as you know, Senator Bishop, our career technical education tech prep agreements as well. This is just another avenue to offer our students. And I want to speak to the importance of it because there has been sometimes from schools and school districts, and I've experienced it internally in a school district when we began, and it might be externally now that it's just something new, so it might take away something else rather than add value. And I'm just here to share that it adds value. It offers the equity of opportunity that our state really cries for. When we talk about a quality education, it has two things. This high standards, quality has high standards, and this allows the rigor that is necessary for those high standards. But high standards around our state, we adopted new standards which elevated what students should know and be able to do all across Alaska. The second part of quality is variance, and you want to have low variance, which means you don't want to be able, you want to talk about the state of Alaska having quality. You have to have the high standards as well as the low variance among school districts. Written in this bill is a reporting mechanism. So if the state will absolutely know where the barriers are. Is it preparation of students? Is it finances? Is it all the other things to work out, the transitions? But part of this bill, one of the strengths is, what are the roadblocks? So just simply hearing the roadblocks of we can't do it, I say that this is a strong bill to let us know why or why we can't in individual districts. I believe in the districts, and if we work together cooperatively, we could come up with solutions to help each other make this available to all students in Alaska. We might hear that this is an unfunded mandate, and those of you in the Senate Finance are keenly aware of that term. And I just want to share that bills such as this really speak to priorities of our state. It speaks to the priority of our legislature, our governor, our school districts, our local communities. But what do we want for children? We want them to have really, you know, no ceiling put on them about what they've learned in our system and be able to go college, career, you know, and be life ready, that this offers that. And so rather than thinking of the terms unfunded mandate, I say that this is really mandating what our priorities should be. And there's several bills now that the Senate is hearing that really shares what the priorities should be of our state. Preparing kids for post-secondary is essential, whether they go right into work or college. It's a collaboration with our own university system. I've had hundreds and hundreds over the year. There's 280 kids in the middle college here in Anchorage right now. About 70 to 78% of the students who leave high school with a high school diploma have about 45 credit hours, upwards of some of them have over 60. And 70 to 78% stay in the system somewhere, whether that's UAS, UAA, or UAF. Interesting, most of them choose UAF, really for probably that on-campus experience. So we know that once they're there, there's quality. As you know from the Alaska Performance Report done by the McDowell Group just put out in January, really, it's about not knowing or not understanding the value of our own university systems. I just think it's also, finally, It's bringing us closer to growing our own and having them educated right here in Alaska, knowing what we need. And I'm working right now with a small school district in the Lower Yukon, bringing kids in and partnering with them to offer middle college. And we have a plan with the university for the last 2 years for really building educators in our state. I just can't say enough. This is a solid bill. It can be done. I'm speaking as a superintendent who's willing to help any other school district bring this to fruition for the children of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. We have questions from the table. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that presentation. Looking at the memorandum of understanding, a couple questions on that. The agreement is for upwards of 200 ASD students, and I'm just curious, what do you think if we pass this would be the number of students? What's the demand for this program, do you sense?
Sure. Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski. That's a great question, and really it's grown over time here in Anchorage. We started with less than 100 students, and we continue to have a waiting list as well. But the thing is that the kids have to qualify for it. So they have to work hard their freshman and sophomore, eighth grade years, have a sight on it. And they actually have to be able to take a college-bearing course first off. They can't, building level courses or prelim that don't really carry college credited courses or their remedial courses that they offer at the college. Our goal is to stay clear of those, that when we partner with UAA, we're going to share that our kids are college ready. And so they take either the ALEX in math, or it used to be the Accupation for English. I'm not sure if they're using that. But they have to qualify in English or math for at least an on grade level, if you will, freshman grade level college course. And when they can do that, then they just take off from there because they're exposed. We're happy that it builds. There is a level of kids that you take your very first year, your freshman year, depending on the build out of the college courses on the college side. We wanted to ensure that our students had an excellent experience. There are limited spaces, but we've grown over time. Now we're, like I said, at 280. Every single one of the students started with us with either on the math or language arts side of the house, having a college-bearing course at the get-go. Mandatory in our program, just so you know, is also kind of a boot camp for college learning and things like that. So we support it, but we have to grow smartly. I don't think the floodgates are going to open up to where it's unbearable. I believe this is a program that will grow over time, especially when we demonstrate value. I think we can be ready to do this, and I don't think it's going to be exceptional costs outside of what is already provided to our school districts.
Follow up?
Yeah, and then, again, looking at the memorandum of agreement, it looks like the classes, the majority are done at the Eagle River campus. Is that correct? And are there transportation options for kids to get there?
Through the chair, that's a great question. And within our school district, we no longer have an Eagle River campus. After the earthquake, we had to move it on site. Back in 2012, the MATSU started on the Eagle River campus because we weren't granted permission in MATSU. It's there now, however, operating very, very well. But since the earthquake in November of 19, the campus was moved to the main campus. Through our regular system, we have, as you know, King Tech High School, which provides busing to all schools to a central site for additional capstone courses and career technical education. It happens to be co-located adjacently to the university. And so through our own busing system, students who would like the middle college may ride a bus. However, a lot of students choose not to, except for on snowy days, their parents make them not drive in from different schools in the way south or way north. But we do provide transportation to King Tech, and then students take a UAA bus that picks them up right there from King Tech. So transportation is not an issue. And that's one of the things that we've done on the high school side, is that we've taken down the barriers for students. Those are, formative barriers with busing and different things like that. But we've also taken down those barriers of just that that construct of understanding what goes into college, from FAFSA to applying to scheduling courses, when do I see an advisor? And those are the supports that we offer really, really well on the high school side, to have that full support of students, which we know make for very college-ready kids.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure who to ask this question over the sponsor, but you've already touched on it a little bit, and that has to do with the unfunded mandate. What kind of funding responsibilities are there out there for the separate school districts that are there, especially those in the rural parts of Alaska? Are they going to be coming back at us as this is an unfunded mandate? And do you have any idea what the amount is that they'd have to have in order to be a part of that program?
Didn't know if this was coming.
Through the chair, I think I can address that.
And for the record, that's Paul Lehrer with the university.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Through our virtual middle college program, the Alaska Advantage Program, we are working with each of the districts, and as a partnership, the pricing is such that we share the cost of those programs with the district, and so there's a little bit of a different pricing. I can get that for the committee on what that would be for some of our rural districts, and I can share that with the committee. But again, you know, the face-to-face options that we have with Anchorage School District, there's a lot more that we provide on that as well. And so each of those partnerships works for that district, and we can get you that information when we look there. But the idea is to provide an affordable, accessible program for every student in the state that is looking for that. And so we will definitely work with the districts on that. And we recognize that if we don't, there are partners out there external to Alaska who want to do that and who are already in the state offering programs. But our programs have the unique advantage of being Alaska-focused in many cases and geared towards our students and towards our state. So we want to be that partner that every district reaches out to first for these dual enrollment programs, because we know if we don't do it, there are others out there that will.
And through the chair, I could also offer just some guidance that really, when we receive our BSA funds, according to the adjusted daily membership, I just want to share that we're making decisions every day about the value of those dollars and the value of the education we want for our students. And so in Anchorage, as well as MATSU, we had to really change the way we were budgeting towards different outcomes in which we desired. I can share that in the beginning, when it was smaller, we had to make some different adjustments. Now that it's growing, things that generally build on each other come to fruition. We also have used cooperatives with other school districts to be able to afford the cost. As I shared, Lower Yukon reached out to us to see how can we offer college-level courses, dual credit to our students. And so we put our heads together to figure this out, something that they can afford as well as ASD can afford, as well as the university. And so, again, for me, with my after 31 years, I would like to share that if we focus on the kinds of outcomes we want, I think we can make the right decisions for our funding in regard to those unfunded mandates or priorities for spending. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue.
Senator Olson?
Yes, I guess I'm not doubting that this has a very valuable program, and as was pointed out by the bill sponsor, if it had been done when we were in college or our children are there, it would have been very beneficial to us. We wouldn't have agonized for all those years. But how do we make sure that we have all students in the state of Alaska able to go and participate, and especially where in rural Alaska, where you've got such terrible outcomes from kids that have gone on to college and have not even passed the first year with the dropout rate, how do we make sure that they have the best chance of succeeding in that program?
Senator Stevens, Well, thank you. Take a stab at that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate Senator Olson's concerns about rural Alaska, my concerns as well. You know, it's not easy to do any of this, but I think the bigger districts have done a great job. And I have to express my appreciation for Dr. Layer and Dr. Bishop. We've gone through so many interpretations of this bill. They've been there for all of it, every step of the way, and have helped us to make sure it's where it now is. But as you can imagine, if you have a large district, it's a little, maybe not easier, but it's more doable to offer a college credit to your students. The smaller districts, it's much, much harder. I really appreciate the fact that Dr. Bishop has stepped forward, particularly with the Lower Yukon District, and made sure that even though there's one or two students out there, that they can have access to this program as well as anybody else. Now, I realize we have a problem often with students who are not prepared, and many students do need remediation, and that can occur in a school district. We can't guarantee that every student that wants to go to college should be able to go to college and are prepared. You know, there will be failures. Some students won't quite make it. But this is a program that does make sure that rural Alaska is addressed as well as urban Alaska. And, you know, I always hear this issue about unfunded mandates, and I like to think that this is a funded mandate. You know, we fund education, K-12 in the state, about $1 billion a year. And any time we ask K-12 to do something, we always hear some complaint saying, unfunded mandate, we need more money. But, you know, $1 billion a year should get us the education we want for our students. And so I don't believe the charge that this is an unfunded mandate is really correct. The districts, Superintendent Bishop, as well as university, Dr. Lair, have made sure that every student that has the ability to go on to college will be able to and take one of these classes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if you look at Lower Yukon's kind of the outlier in this whole thing because they do have a program. They have the Longhouse that's in Anchorage that they've had the foresight to go ahead and invest in. And so I think it's other school districts don't have that advantage. And I'm assuming the other thing I think I was going to ask about, the boarding school at Edgecombe, are they on the program too that their students can go ahead and get college credits?
Dr. Bishop, is Mount Edgecombe available in this program?
Chair Bishop, yes, I do believe that the superintendent, she did say that they offer some dual credit. And again, the program that looks like in Anchorage might look differently elsewhere. And I think the questions are warranted, but really with the collaboration, if the state said, let's figure out how to make this available, and do this, what Senator Olson brought up is very true. There might only be one or two students in a particular school district that want it or are ready for it. That's the power of the cooperative, that if we pull together from districts around the state, if we're offering English 111, whether it's in Anchorage or whether it's out Mount Edgecombe, we could have other students around the state create a cohort of those ready students. And so that's one, if they're at on-site online. If you wanted an on-site experience where you actually come into Anchorage, I believe the Lower Yukon, and Superintendent Stone can speak to this, he wants to propose a program just like Mount Edgecombe where the money follows the students, that if anyone in Alaska wants to get into the middle college, that he would have them at the Longhouse. They create a AMCS or a college-ready space for them to attend. So we're set and ready to really come up with innovative ways that Alaskans have access for the equity of outcomes that we want.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So just still trying to follow the money. Don't get me wrong, I like this program. When I was on the Anchorage School Board, we went and visited the program in Eagle River, talked to the students. It was very well received, and I support the concept, but let's just talk about the money. According to the sectional analysis, Section 2H, as in hotel, the average daily membership holds harmless a school district's average daily membership. Students participating in the program are still to be counted towards the respective school district's ADM. So for the 287 some odd students, Superintendent Bishop, you're receiving the 5,000 or whatever it may be per student. And then you have an MOU with the university that describes how you're going to help cover, it's going to be net neutral to the university, yet these kids are enrolled in courses offered by the University of Alaska with credit, tuition, and so forth, and books are in, books are not included in this. The kid, the student has to pay for that. But who is paying the University of Alaska for the tuition and the credits that the kids are taking?
Through the chairs to Senator Von Imhoff, Anchorage School District presently writes a check to the university. And our MOUs, just so you know, do include books. In other school districts, they may not. I know that MATSU doesn't include books anymore. But we receive funding through the ADM and then have students attend. And we utilize their BSA to pay the university. We don't pay the full tuition that I guess someone who graduated high school would leave. Our MOUs or MOAs really spell out the services that our students will utilize. And there are some services and charges that you would have for a student that is fully into the university system charged. Because these students are still part of the high school, much of these can be covered. Those, you know, extra services that we offer our students are covered through our schools. The students, as I said before, just to give you a picture, if I only qualified for the English language arts part, maybe I'm in a history and an English class, but I still haven't passed the ALEKS test to be college ready. We don't allow our students to go into a lower level math to get remediation. We know how to do that on our side, and our capacity is to create college ready kids. So we're beginning to understand the types of skills that they need to be able to be there. So they're coupled, Alaska Middle College School is coupled with another school that has faculty that they share, staffing, our teachers share. So teachers, for instance, at King Tech High School might have King Tech students as well as Alaska Middle College students building math capacity to pass that ALEKS test to be able to be college ready. So within a system, we're just working with our resources already to figure out how do we make this come to fruition. But the funding is actually through our system and our manner of payment and what we've worked out is affordable. There isn't additional money anywhere else. The money that we receive pays for the student's education. We are not utilizing additional funds from grants or anything else.
For the record, that was Superintendent Bishop, Anchorage School District. Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
Thank you. So I appreciate that. So yes, the fiscal notes do say that it's a zero funding, zero fiscal note for the state, and that it appears that the ASD at least, Anchorage School District and the university have created an agreement where they're sharing their resources for the professors, coursework, whatever it may be. Now, the other, and that's good because ASD has, you know, 45,000 students or so, and there is efficiencies to be had with that number of students. Of course, with 52, 53 districts, not every district has those large student counts. While I agree with this bill, the section 2B, as in boy, UA shall enter in the agreement. I understand that an agreement doesn't necessarily mean an active program. It just means that there's some agreement in place with the 52 districts, 53 districts around the state. I do have a problem, or I just have a little bit of heartburn with shall. I prefer the word may, simply because there are some districts that may not be equipped with the financial resources, with the fund balances, with the student counts, with whatever, that may or may not want to participate in this program. I just feel that this program should be offered to school districts that wish to have it. I understand that once it's offered, they don't necessarily have to participate, which is why should we have to have the shell? There are many districts that may not be able to afford this, and some districts can, some districts cannot. So that's just my comment for the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions? Senator Stevens.
I'd like Tim to respond to that, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
For the record, Tim Lampkin. Through the chair, Senator von Imhoff, that is a comment and question that we discuss quite a lot, the shalls versus mays. This is, again, an instance where we want to express an expectation that this program be made available. The shall in that particular section was kept intact so that there would be an agreement, that it was well known that it was available equally across the state, but that agreement in those instances could be that there is no agreement, that they opt out, essentially. That's the effect of, or in the intent of the effect of that section.
And Mr. Chairman, I think this to some extent addresses the issue that Dr. Bishop brought up of the equity of opportunity. Every student in Alaska who is qualified to take a college class, no matter where they live, should have this ability. This saying shall instead of may simply says an agreement will be reached. The district does not have to use it. They don't have to be a part of it, but every student, I believe, should have that opportunity.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee to our two invited guests today? Seeing none, let's, Mr. Lampkin, if you could take us through the sectional again. It's been a year since we've had a tune-up.
Certainly. Section 1 of the bill, and first I should confirm that we have version A before us. Section 1 is AS 1407-168. It regards annual reporting submitted to the legislature, and it will include reporting on middle college activity. Section 2 is the heart of the bill. It's what sets up the program. It's new Article 15 under AS 1430. First subsection being 1430-780A establishes the middle college program for eligible students to enroll in the University of Alaska, earning credit toward a college degree. B is the shall section that we just discussed, whereas there shall the burden is primarily on the university shall take initiative to enter into an agreement and make available to each school district the middle college program accessible to any eligible student to participate. Subsection C describes eligibility as a baseline eligibility requirements to include being enrolled in a public school, that they be in high school, grades 9 through 12, that they don't already have a diploma, and they demonstrate to the satisfaction of both the school district and the university that they are academically competent to complete college-level coursework. Subsection D is what school districts would bring to the table insofar as establishing and maintaining awareness of the middle college program for parents and students to participate. Subsection E addresses financing, describing that the university and the school district shall include in their respective MOAs or MOU the manner in which they'll share costs associated with the program. Provides for some examples there. Subsection F regards course quality, and this is intended to address accreditation. It specifies that courses offered through the program meet course quality, our state content standards, and quality instruction, and regular course and instructor review. Section G is intended to put some sidebars on this, a cap. It would indicate that students may not enroll in more than 15 credit hours per semester. As you may know, 12 credit hours is considered full-time when you're enrolled in university. It also puts a cap on the total amount of credits earned under the program at 60 credits. Subsection H regards the average daily membership of the school districts and their funding component thereof, and that those monies will be held harmless for students participating in the program be still counted toward a respective school district's ADM. Subsection I regards transcripts and describes the manner in which the university and school districts can exchange student transcript information for purposes of identifying their eligibility for participating. Subsection J describes definitions for the use of the term program and school districts consistent with the use of that term in other statutes. And section 3 of the bill is AS 1440-040, relates to the powers and duties of the university. It's a conforming amendment that the university is to implement the middle college program and regularly review it for quality assurance. That concludes the sectional analysis, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Senator Wilson.
Just a quick question on page 4, I guess, line 8, about the university may release the school transcripts. For the University of Alaska, does this requirement meet the Federal Education Protection Act FERPA policies for the university?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that was language that was negotiated between districts and the university, and I would be happy to defer to Dr. Lehrer on that specifically.
Senator Wilson, would you want Dr. Lehrer to come answer the question?
Yeah, just yes, no, yes.
Dr. Lehrer, did you hear the question from Senator Wilson?
Yes, I did, and yes, we are in FERPA compliance with the agreements that we have in place.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Wilikowski.
Just curious if these credits, the university credits, are transferable outside of the UA system?
Through the chair, if I may. Yes, Senator, they are university credits. They are from an accredited institution, and they are transferable outside of the University of Alaska system to any higher education institution in the world.
For Senate records, that's Dr. Lehrer. And now we're going to Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So in one of these smaller school districts, let's say the 50% of the kids decide that they want to participate in this. So then what happens to the home district in terms of their staffing, and what happens to the university if they have to add an extra staff member now because they have a big growth of students in one area?
Senator, Superintendent Bishop, you want to take a stab at that?
Through the chair to Senator Von Imhoff. Sure. It's very similar to how we operate now with students and their education. I have a belief that our money and our staffing should follow student needs and what students, are after. There's different models, as I shared. Here we utilize for college credit university professors. But there's also dual credit options whereby our high schools, and we have this as well, where the high school teacher actually is the adjunct teacher at the university already in the evening. And so they're teaching right during their school day that they're already paid for, just the university credits in the dual credit program. So they have to use the textbooks. They'll have to use the curriculum. But essentially, they are the ones delivering the university high-quality program. And so there's different ways to think about it, and that's why it's really down to, if I had a large amount of kids that had the need, I would plan it one way, utilizing staff and working with the university. If I had very few, maybe one or two kids, and I still needed my staff to teach full-time the credits in my high school, I might want to join a co-op with other school districts. Again, it allows for the funding that our state provides for education to meet the educational needs of each student.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? We're going to go to public testimony next. Thanks, everyone. Okay, we're going to open up for public testimony. I'm setting a 2-minute limit. First up, we have Gene Stone, Superintendent of Lower Yukon School District, Mountain Village. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. This is Gene Stone, for the record, Superintendent for the Lower Yukon School District. And I wanted to give some testimony here in support of SB 32. Give me just 1 second to pull it up. Again, good morning. My name is Gene Stone. I'm the Chief School Administrator for the Low Yukon School District. And thank you for allowing this opportunity for the public to provide testimony on SB 32. So I'm in support of SB 32, providing early college experiences for all eligible students across the state is an important educational opportunity for rural students who primarily obtain dual credit through only online opportunities currently. I had the opportunity to help establish the first middle college program in Alaska while working as Dr. Bishop's assistant superintendent in the MATSU. The ability to use K-12 dollars for earning up to an associate's degree saves families thousands of dollars and develops a system that keeps students in state, as over 70% of the students who begin the UAA middle college experience remain in the UAA system rather than going outside of Alaska. Currently, Lower Yukon School District has a residential program that partners with Anchorage School Districts. It's called the Kuselbach Career Academy. It offers Lower Yukon School District's students the chance to take CTE courses at King Tech High School. Also allows students from Lower Yukon School District the opportunity to enroll in Anchorage School District's middle college program that partners with UAA. Funding follows students attending boarding schools throughout the state. This opportunity should be no different. The return on investment is significant, and this would not be an unfunded mandate. The money exists in the K-12 system. We are interested in growing a cohort of middle college students that come from other rural districts throughout the state with the intention of developing future teachers. Dr. Bishop has opened the way for this partnership. And as our legislature continues to seek ways to provide college opportunities for all students, please be mindful that for these young students, the most powerful opportunity and greatest opportunity will come from being on a campus. And while online opportunities are better than nothing, our middle college experiences have proved that the power of the place, being on campus, is what opens the door for a successful college experience for high school students. And just want to thank you all for supporting SB 32. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stone, for your comments. Next, we're going to Cordova School Board. Peter Hoffner, Cordova. Put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please, sir.
Excellent. Good morning, Senate Finance Committee and Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Stedman and Senator Bishop. I'm Peter Hefner. I'm on the Cordova School Board as well as being on the Board of Directors for the Alaska Association of School Boards. I'm testifying on Senate Bill 32, Alaska Middle College Bill. I support students getting dual credit through their high schools and courses taken in conjunction with the University of Alaska and their high school. Unfortunately, this bill mandates that every school district have an agreement with the University of Alaska system. I appreciate this opportunity from the university system, and Cordova students do take advantage of this program. I support these opportunities for students, and it is good for families to save some college fees, and the credits are accepted at all University of Alaska campuses. But this should be left to local school districts to decide, as it was a local control issue, spending K-12 dollars. What is the problem that this bill is trying to address is the larger question. Is it the high cost of college, thus rushing to have college credits in high school? Knowing that national data states that some 60% of students entering college need remediation, will this help? Are high school students ready to take college classes? Ninth graders, in high school, students are building their study skills. Are we developing an equity issue, rural versus urban? Are college professors ready to teach high school students? Are high schools and colleges teaching synchronously? Do the university times have to match with high school times? Or is it asynchronous, thus independent study? I don't know. And then who pays for these courses? Are all courses available for all students or just for some of the students? Education is a journey. It is not a race. Mandating this program across the state is not the appropriate way to approach the middle college program. We have just heard in testimony that we can afford this middle college program. Currently, our K-12 school funding system is not even keeping up with inflation. For the last 10 years, the BSA has only increased 9%, while the consumer price index has increased 27%, and our school district health insurance has increased 326%. To me, this bill would further chip away K-12 classroom dollars. We need to focus on all of our students. And mandating this program is not the correct way to go about it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Chris Rattan, Superintendent Craig School System. Craig Alaska, could you put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please?
Yes, good morning, Finance Committee. This is Chris Rattan. I'm the superintendent with Craig City School District, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 32. Craig City School District appreciates the intent of the bill to increase University of Alaska's access to high school students across the state. And this bill provides Alaska families increased educational choice, flexibility, and options. The district does have a concern about one aspect of the bill as it is currently crafted, which is outlined on page 3, lines 1C. An agreement entered into by a school district and the University of Alaska under B of this section must outline the manner in which costs associated with the program will be shared between the participating school district and the University of Alaska. You've heard from previous testimony as well as some of the questions from committee members regarding access equity between urban and rural school districts and what those costs might be, and can school districts incur those costs. I might suggest an option for the committee to consider regarding this section of the bill to include language with the intent of that the University of Alaska shall develop a negotiated, affordable rate that is uniform across all districts for in-person, distance delivery, tech prep, and correspondence courses that might provide a greater playing field for all school districts and students across the state to access this program. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. Craig City School District supports the intent of this bill. We think it's a good bill. We do have some concerns about some of the nuances with it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Senator Stevens, a quick question. Does this bill mandate that school districts participate?
No, Mr. Chairman. There's been an enormous misunderstanding out here, and I think from Cordova as well as from Craig, there's no mandate here. There is an opportunity. This is taking no power away from the local school district. They have total control to be involved or not to be involved. So should Cordova choose not to take advantage of this program, the school district there, they don't have to. This is only offering it to those districts who want to provide higher education to their students. No mandate at all, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Tok, Alaska, Scott McManus. 2 minutes, please. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Senator Bishop. My name is Scott McManus, and I'm the superintendent of Alaska Gateway School District. Senator Bishop and members of the Senate Finance Committee, I appreciate the opportunity today to address SB 32, the Middle College Bill. I have colleagues in larger districts whom I respect, just as I have a high amount of regard for the sponsors of this bill, and I do want to support this great idea, but I am in opposition to the bill as it sits right now, because the bill states the district shall enter into an agreement. That is what is currently written. That is the only thing I take issue with. I spoke to and wrote about these very same issues during testimony in previous sessions.
I offered suggestions that could easily address those issues, and just as Chris, Superintendent Raton did from Craig, and I agree with him and support that, suggestion. But we need, for small districts, we need to have solutions that make, that are more flexible to the needs and capacities that we have, whether we're small or large, like Anchorage, where they have it working. If we're going to do this, we should include small districts in the program design. So conceptually, I'm in favor of SB 32 and what it's trying to accomplish. Dual credit is not a new idea. I think it's having a dual credit and tech prep programs are such a good idea that I started a program here in Alaska Gateway 20 years ago. We have long established written policies approved by our school board that support a system in Alaska Gateway that has provided dual credit to literally hundreds of students and their families so far. At this very moment, out of 120 high school students in my district, we have 34 high school students, or 28% of the student body, who are taking courses from the UA system without being mandated to do so, and it is within what we can afford. No students who have the capacity to do well in the courses are left out, and I'm proud to tell you that with our school district support, we've had many of our students graduate high school with a full associate's degree from the university, and we didn't need to be told that it was a good idea. This is a practice that has saved parents money, supports our high-end college-bound students, and reduces systemic redundancy. It is a good thing. But each district in our state has widely varied capabilities on how they're able to deliver these kind of programs. And while, and what is not a good thing is to take away the local control of our elected school boards and their staff who know our communities in terms of designing programs that work for them. The middle college bill could require school districts to pay up to 30 credits a year at the university, which would cost $7,000. For our correspondent students, we get $4,900 in our total state allocation. So before we've even dealt with any of the management issues, we're already about $3,000 in the hole. That's just for one student. I mean, so right now, that's an issue. In the current fiscal note provided by the state, it says there won't be any cost to the state. And in the fiscal note provided by the university, they state there won't be any cost to them. And that just leaves school districts. So it's not cost neutral to the school districts. In a small system where I can't reduce staff because, you know, I have a bunch of students going to a campus at a university, which doesn't exist for most of my students, I can't cut teachers. There are no savings here for me. And I want to support kids, and we do support kids, as you can see, with significant resources, and we do it in a way that supports them. In systems that have larger scale, like Fairbanks or Kenai or Mat-Su, great idea. Totally support it, because they can reduce numbers, they can make it work, they have campuses they can transport students to. So I really do support the concept, and I really do have a huge amount of respect for the authors of the bill, and I know they mean to do well. And it's hard for me to oppose it. Just with some of these small changes, it could be totally acceptable.
Thank you for your thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to Patrick Mayer in Sandpoint, Aleutians East Borough. Good morning, and put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Senator Bishop and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. You know, I am. I have listened with great interest this morning to the testimony, and there really is a huge difference between the districts in this state. We are a smaller district out in the Aleutian chain, and I would like to proudly say that we have students that have amassed through the whole system 60 credits, or on their way to 60 credits completion by the end of the year. So we have voluntarily been involved in an agreement with the University of Alaska, and I think that's important to emphasize voluntarily. I don't think it's necessary to mandate this, and I did hear Senator Stevens, but the way the bill currently reads, it does appear that it is mandated, and I think that consideration for shall versus may warrants additional attention. In the Aleutians East Borough, we, like other small districts, we have limitations in terms of our bandwidth. This, we offer students the opportunity to take dual credit within the bandwidth that we have available to us. And satellite bandwidth, we have 25 megs down at each site, is not the same as fiber bandwidth provided in Anchorage, Matsu, Fairbanks, et cetera, larger districts. It's very unstable. It goes down often. But we have been able still to offer dual credit opportunities for our students, and we're very, very proud of that. And we will continue to do so within our ability to do so. I'm not going to say unfunded mandate because nobody likes those words, but there are no resources that go with this. These resources would come out of our existing general fund, and that is a strain given the fact that there has not been an adjustment in the BSA over many years. This is an issue of scale. It was referenced before. I'm going to talk about it in a different way. If we had four students pull out of a high-level math class, leaving two behind, what becomes of that math teacher? We would also have to, in that situation, and we do this, only it's period-specific. We ascribe a period for a digital learning lab and try to build our students' schedules accordingly. But what would we do with that teacher? In smaller districts, it's a matter of scale. It's not like a larger district. They have the capacity to be able to move people around and make those kind of adjustments because there simply are more people. And lastly, this is an equity issue. It is just not the same in rural Alaska as it is in larger districts. And we do a great job, and we're doing a better job every year, every semester, every day to meet our students' needs. But mandatory would be a big issue for us. And so I would encourage the committee to look at this as an equity issue and consider that the opt-in versus mandatory. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. The last up, it says here, the Greg from Principal of Matsu Middle College is online for questions only. Is that true, or did you want to testify?
I'm happy to answer questions.
All right. Seeing no questions, thank you. We're closing public testimony. Anybody else in the room wishing to testify? Senator Wilson? You had a question, sir?
I do, but I'll wait till you finish your testimony, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're done with public testimony.
All right. I do have a question for the bill sponsor. How does this affect for students that enroll in homeschool programs?
Say that again, Senator.
How will this affect people who choose to enroll in homeschool programs?
I don't think it'll have any impact at all. This is just another choice that people can make. If you choose to homeschool your kids, I don't believe this have any impact. Maybe I'll ask my aide if he has discovered any impact at all.
If I can clarify, Mr. Chair, I guess can homeschool students participate in the middle of college?
Dr. Bishop's nodding her head. Yes.
And just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It sounds that from the testimony, a lot of small school districts wish to keep their kids enrolled in their own school and just want to encourage those folks that may be watching from those homeschools, from the school districts, so they wish to enroll their kids in middle college. It seems that they may not have that opportunity within their school districts, but could homeschool their kids to have an opportunity then to enroll into middle college programs across the state, if that's what I'm hearing correctly, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lamkin?
Through the for the record, Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Some general points here being made, if I could address them all collectively. First of all, I think continues to be a misunderstanding or at least resistance to the fact that this program is clearly sets up on page 2, line 20. The University of Alaska shall make the program available to school districts. It does not say that school districts shall make a middle college program available for their students. The onus here is on the university, and that was carefully crafted and negotiated between school districts, superintendents, and the university last year. Secondly, when we see instances of school districts that their agreement is that they can't do this program or are unable to, during the reporting process of that, it should clearly indicate what the barriers are, therefore, to enter into the program and how we might address and move forward with those addressing those barriers. Thirdly, if we maintain May, then we're going to move forward with what we've already got. And so I suppose the question as a policy here is if we're comfortable with what we got and then set it as may. But if it shall, then again, the purpose is to provide them an opportunity to opt out, and if they do, to report on what the barriers and why they're having to opt out. And then finally, there was a comment made as you know, what becomes of those staff? I suppose the real question here is, what becomes of those students? If we have really top-notch students that are excelling, we should recognize that and give them every opportunity possible to soar. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would request maybe to defer once again to Dr. Bishop to speak again, if possible.
Dr. Bishop, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you, Chair Bishop. I would just like to say that final thing, if we already have the opportunity for May presently, and if our outcomes in the state of Alaska are satisfactory to us, perhaps we don't need this bill. I, for one, say that we can do more, and when we know better, we can do better. And I know collectively with my fellow superintendents, even those that don't see a possibility in their district, we're very good at figuring things out. And I would like to say that I would appreciate all students in the state of Alaska having this opportunity. And certainly I never thought of Senator Wilson's roundabout, but that essentially would be a way if we left it as May. Students would leave districts anyway to have this opportunity if they truly wanted it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, seeing no further questions, we're going to set this bill aside for this time. We're going to move on to our next bill, and that would be Senate Bill 36. So we'll give a minute. We'll take a brief at ease while we switch out here just for a moment. Good morning. Okay, we're back on the record. Senate Bill 36, an act relating to reporting requirements of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska. This is the first hearing of this bill. And then again, it's our intention to hold this bill here today to present the bill. Our Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin again. And please put yourselves on the record and tell us what you got.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak. Senate Bill 36 is a bill that really came about because of the loss of accreditation in the School of Education in 2019 by the University of Alaska, Anchorage. We were all caught up short by that. I've been through accreditation as a professor of history at the university, and I know the process, and the process, Mr. Chairman, of accreditation is pretty cut and dried. The accreditation team visits a campus. They look at your program or school, whatever it is that they're looking for accreditation. They tell you what you need to do to make sure you retain accreditation. They come back months later to make sure you're making progress. And then in the end, they give you accreditation or not. Very seldom, in fact, never in my experience, have I seen a school lose accreditation. As chairman of education committee last year, I was shocked to learn that we had lost accreditation in the School of Education. I talked to the president of the university, who knew nothing about it, who was shocked that they had lost accreditation at that time. The reason for this bill is to bring us into the loop, to make sure we know what's going on, to make sure the university reports to us what's happening in accreditation, and to make sure the university and its president is paying attention to what's happening to accreditation. It is just shocking to me that the administration had no idea that they were about to lose accreditation in the Department of Education. There may be other departments and other programs that that are on the verge of losing accreditation. If that's true, everyone needs to be aware of it, and everyone needs to do their best to make sure they comply with the requirements of the accrediting agency. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically it. It's bringing the legislature into the program to know that we get a report every 2 years from the university on how they are accomplishing accreditation. And as I don't know if Dr. Lair is going to be on here, but I know he will tell us that there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of accreditation teams coming to Alaska at various times to make sure that departments and programs are properly accredited. We need to be a part of that process. We can't let this happen again.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Mr. Lampkin?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you, version Bravo B is another bill that you saw last in 2019 as a resultant of the loss of accreditation at UAA School of Ed. This bill is intended to correct that. It's to maintain lines of communication, as indicated by Senator Stevens. That's the overall summary of the bill. It includes some housekeeping in terms of the timeliness of reporting to the legislature and education committees, and then the Section 2 is going to go specifically into this report from the university. That's kind of a summary of the bill. I'm happy to go right into the sectional formally if you wish.
Please.
So, Section 1 amends existing reporting requirements regarding teacher training retention. When that was originally passed at the time, it specified that the university submit the report to the education committees, and we had an unintended consequence for that at the time, because when that deadline came up, the other body had not been organized, and so that became problematic. And so that Section 1 essentially changes it to specify that these reports go to the Senate Secretary or House Chief Clerk in a timely manner, and that the report subsequently be officially presented at the time we had in there in person, and for obvious reasons we've struck the in-person component for this bill, but that these reports be done at the discretion of the education committee chairs. Section 2 is a new subsection that establishes this requirement that the university offer a report specifically on accreditation biennially, which every other year, and that report submitted to the legislature by the 30th day of the first regular session of each legislature. And the report subsequently also to be presented in a formal manner before the education committees. That's the conclusion of the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Lampkin, do you, on the Section 2, the last paragraph, is presented in a formal hearing. I mean, who would speak to that from the university? Do we know Senator Stevens? Who might?
It would be the Board of Regents.
A lead person from the Board of Regents.
That's right.
Thank you. Okay. Questions from committee members? We're going to go to public hearing next under invited testimony. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stevens, I guess I have two questions. The first one, Mr. Chair, would be to present this report to the legislative committees having jurisdiction over education. Is this thus forcing that education chair to have this report, or just to be given the report to distribute to their committee members?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Senator.
I guess, are we mandating what the committee chair will do of that committee, that the committee has to have this presentation given before their committee, or is it optional so the committee chair can just distribute the report
to? It should be mandated. It should be required. The university should be reporting that the education committee, of course, is responsible not only for K-12, but for the University of Alaska, and accreditation is a crucial part of that. So I can't imagine a chair of education not wanting to hear on accreditation.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess my second question.
Second question, Senator Wilson.
How many programs in the university are accredited?
You know, there are a lot of programs and a lot of departments. Do you have a number on that? I don't know that we have the number, and Dr. Laird is not online. It seems to me like it was well over 100.
200, I believe.
Through the chair, Tim Lampkin, Staff Center Chief, in your packet should be a summary of dated August of 25th of 2020. There are hundreds. We do have Dr. Colina, the Vice Provost, online, I believe, that can go into
invited
details.
Invited testimony here in a minute, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. Yeah, they weren't numbers, so I just didn't want to try to count them all, and it's a lot of hand counting.
And Mr. Chairman, what's, of course, most important is the accreditation for each of the major campuses, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, and each of the smaller campuses as well. So this is on a large macro scale for the university itself, but also on specific programs like teachers training, teachers education, and nursing programs. So as I say, we'll find out a number for you, but there are hundreds of them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Are these reports already submitted to the Board of Regents each year, to your knowledge?
I know now, because of the loss of accreditation, the university has tightened up on that. As I said earlier, everyone was taken by surprise when they lost the accreditation of School of Education in Anchorage. It is really a shame that that occurred, but I'm sure the regents now are trying to get this, get a handle on this and take control of this and make sure that they are on top of accreditation. So there is a report that goes now to the Board of Regents, and that would be what they would be sharing with the legislature.
So just a confirmation.
Follow up.
Thank you. So the report, to confirm, this report will be seen to the Board of Regents first and then forwarded to the legislature, so both bodies are going to see the same thing.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other further questions from committee members before we go to invited testimony? Seeing none. We're going to go to the university, and Susan Kalina, I believe, Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, University of Alaska, Anchorage. Good morning, and put yourself on the record, please.
Good morning. Through the chair, for the record, Mr. Chairman, Susan Kalina, Vice Provost for Academic Affairs and Institutional Effectiveness, University of Alaska Anchorage, and also UAA's Accreditation Liaison Officer to the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. Through the chair, to make a brief overview, perhaps, of the reporting.
Please. Please do.
Oh, thank you. This is my first opportunity to actually speak with a committee like this, and I actually want to say I'm very honored to be here to speak for the university and to be speaking with this committee. So UAA, UAF, and UAS have actually been doing reporting to the Board of Regents on accreditation since at least 2012. It's an annual report, and I can certainly talk about the specifics if the committee would like. It covers both our status for our institutional accreditation with the Northwest Commission, and also to the specialized or programmatic accreditations for each program that we have accreditation for. to speak to the scope, at UAA, for example, we have 59 programs that have specialized accreditation, and that's through 24 accrediting agencies, and those agencies are all recognized by the U.S. Department of Education. Our report now outlines all of the recommendations that might be standing for a program. So after an accreditation process, as Senator Stevens pointed out, typically accreditation is on a cycle, and most accreditors are either on a 5, 7, or 10-year cycle. That cycle usually ends with a large self-study that is written and submitted, and then it's followed by a site visit. The results of the site visit usually go to the commission then, the agency itself, and that decision is made often many months later, and the institution receives a letter. They each agency is a bit different and uses different terminology, but typically there'll be some strengths noted. Sometimes they're called commendations, and often, most usually, most programs have some recommendations or maybe areas to work on for improvement. Sometimes the best result that you can ask for is actually just no recommendations at all. They don't provide any strengths or any commendations. It's just that there are no recommendations moving forward. So then the institution is expected to work on those during the cycle, and when the comprehensive report comes due again at the end of the cycle, they'll talk about how they address those issues. Sometimes there might be an ad hoc report required before that. I think that covers, oh, just so that you know then for the Board of Regents report that you were talking about, it does outline now, and I think this is an enhancement, more detail. It provides more detail about all of the recommendations or areas of concern, things to work on, as well as then the status in terms of where the program is relative to those. So that gives you kind of a big picture, I think, of the reporting that we already do and what a sort of typical accreditation experience is on the program level, and that pretty much applies to the institution as well for institutional accreditation. Thank you.
All right. Don't go anywhere. Let me see if I got questions from committee members, please. All right. Seeing Senator Stevens.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, not a committee member, but I do have a question. It's quite concerning to me to hear what Susan has said, that you've been getting these reports since 2012, yet we lost accreditation in 2019. The president did not know about it. My question is, what's wrong with the system the university has? Have you corrected it? And can we expect that the president of the university and the administration and the Board of Regents will know if any department or any part of the university is about to lose accreditation? I appreciate your saying all the steps you go through, and I've experienced those steps. And my experience with the accreditation agency is they let you know well in advance what you have to improve before you lose accreditation. So, Susan, my question of you is, what have you done to make sure this does not happen again?
Through the chair to the senator's question, thank you for that. And I can tell you a few of the things that have happened. As I said, I do, I know, not just believe, that the report that is presented to the Board of Regents goes into more detail than it used to. Here at UAA, I can talk about some of the things that we have done. I can't speak authoritatively at what improvements have been made at UAS and UAF. But at UAA, the deans are asked to provide status updates to the provost at more frequent intervals. We've added more status update meetings that include the provost, the dean, and the program. And also, if any kind of concern arises, it doesn't matter how big or small, the provost is informed and keeps the chancellor informed. So even if there's a solution already in place that the program is working on. So those are some of the actions we have taken to address the issue that you have expressed concern about.
Thank you for that. And if you would put those comments that you just described for your enhanced accreditation oversight, would you send those to the Finance Committee chairs so we can distribute those to the members, please? Thank you.
Through the chair, certainly we will do that.
All right, thanks. Okay, let me take a brief of these. Okay, back on the record. Next, we're going to go to public testimony. And we're open for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify? I don't see anybody online. We're going to close public testimony. And do members have any questions? Seeing none, we're going to set this bill aside. And we're now going to pick up Senate Bill 19. Okay, Senate Bill 19, an act extending the special education service agency and providing for an effective date. This is the second hearing of the bill, Senate Bill 19 and Senate Finance. We open and close public testimony on March the 2nd. It's my intention to reintroduce this bill to address an amendment and then set the bill aside. Just a brief reintroduction. Here today is Senator Stevens, Senator Lamkin, whichever one of you would like to do the brief reintroduction, and we'll start there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens, Kodiak. This has to do with the Special Education Service Agency, an extremely valuable public service to our families and our students throughout Alaska. I do appreciate your looking carefully at this. I do think we need to stabilize the funding. As we know, it may, for the next 8 years, they may face some difficulties just to the cost of doing business. So appreciate you hearing this again. Appreciate your interest in looking at the funding issue.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record, we have one amendment today. This is my amendment, and I'm asking that Senator Hoffman move amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt amendment number one.
Now I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Schein will be here to present the amendment, and if you'd please come to and present the amendment number one, Ms. Schein.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Erin Schein, and I'm staff to co-chair Bishop and the Senate Finance Committee. Amendment number one before you proposes to change the funding formula for the Special Education Services Agency. Currently, the formula is set at $18.65 times the state student average daily membership, or the ADM. This amendment would update that to $23.13, which would be about a 24% increase. According to the Sunset Review of CESA, the audit noted that the statutory funding level for CESA remained level since 2013. However, during that same time period, there was a 63% increase in their caseload. Also, during the March 2nd Senate Finance hearing, the Executive Director, Mr. Pillay, who is also online for questions, provided a fund balance graph, which was on page 14 of the presentation. Co-Chair Bishop asked that we get an updated projection for CESA's funding level, and based on that, over an eight-year extension. As backup documentation for this amendment, you'll see that that graph was provided for this amendment, and then that funding would not be sufficient for after year 2025. There's also a second fund balance graph that was provided for this amendment that shows this amendment being modeled. And it shows that at current rates, that it would be sufficient funding for the sunset period. So this amendment really seeks to address the forthcoming budget shortfall for CESA and the estimated cost increase per fiscal year based on the ADM of fiscal year 21 is about $577,000 per year. On the amendment itself, you can see that on page 1, line 8, you can see that $18.65 is being proposed to be changed with $23.13. And also on page 2 of the amendment, you'll see that on line 3, there is an effective date of January 1st, 2021. If this amendment were to pass, there would be two effective dates for this bill. One would be for the sunset of the actual of CESA, which would be the end of the fiscal year, June 30th, 2021, although the funding increase would start the next start of the fiscal year, which would be July 1st, 2021. And with that, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Welikowski.
Yeah, what's the fiscal impact of this?
Through the chair, Senator Welikowski, it would be about, based off of the fiscal year 21 ADM, or projected ADM would be about $577,000 per year.
Further questions from committee members? Senator Von Imhoff.
Yes, can I just verify, we're using version the A, and it says extends the sunset bill to 2028, or is it 2029? Did you guys already discuss that?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this is to version B, the education.
2029.
Yes, okay. So B. So it would be 2029.
Thank you.
Seeing it, no further. Senator Olson.
Is the sponsor in favor of the amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I did work with the sponsor's staff on this amendment, but if you'd like to hear from him, I'm sure the committee could pull him back up and ask him.
Senator Stevens, would you like to come back and put yourself on the record, and do you support this amendment or oppose it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak, I think this is a marvelous amendment. I think it's facing the reality, and it's something we just need to do because of the cost of doing business.
All right. I'll remove my objection. Okay. All right. Next, seeing no objection, movement number one is adopted. I will get my staff to draft a committee substitute. We'll set this bill aside. And members have any further questions today, comments? Thank you. All right. Next, we're going to conclude today's meeting at about 10:40 here in a minute. And our tomorrow's agenda, Co-Chair Stedman will be chairing the committee. One of his favorite topics, the Alaska Marine Highway, and there will be a final report given by Admiral Tom Barrett on the reshaping group of the Alaska Marine Highway and other bills previously heard. With that, looks like we're ready to adjourn at 10:40. Thank you all.